that call saying, you know, I had the cancer was back, you know, 3 months later and there's no good option for you. Like that was definitely like a really tough pill to swallow. And I had swallowed a lot of really tough pills up until that point. So this was probably the biggest and toughest pill to swallow. So yeah, I've got these two ostomies and I've got nuts all over my abdomen. And so that was my situation at the time.
Welcome to Stoma for Life, the Bowel Cancer Awareness and Life as an Ostomate radio show and podcast. Your host, Rafaela, is here to debunk myths, clear up misconceptions, and help you approach the subject that so many people are afraid to talk about in a positive manner. Listen in for a new perspective. Stoma for Life on UK Health Radio.
Welcome back to Stoma for Life. I am so grateful for you tuning in. This is part two of my conversation with Jeremy Elster. Let me give you a quick recap in case you missed the first part. So Jeremy was diagnosed with ulcerative colitis at 15. He lived with a condition, and anybody knowing what ulcerative colitis is like, the flare-ups, he managed to live with that for a very long time. And especially being a teenager, he shares a lot about what it was like growing up with ulcerative colitis. So he, in his mind, always said, even when doctors suggested that they might have to bypass the section and give him a stoma, he actually categorically said, no, that's not for me. So in his mid-40s, things became quite clear that he was not well. And during a routine colonoscopy, they actually found a mass in his rectum. But doctors weren't sure if this is actually bowel cancer or not. So the diagnosis was not really out there yet, but he did become quite poorly. And they realized he had a abscess in his intestines and also fistulas. And they did have to give him a stoma for him to actually survive. He was so poorly that they gave him a stoma. And at that stage, he didn't even know that a stoma could be reversed, which I think is a very crucial part, that doctors have to be so open in sharing what ostomy life is like, and that in his case, a reversal would have been on the cards. Maybe that would have changed the narrative. I'm not quite sure. But you decide for yourself, because we are going back to my conversation with Jeremy Elster. And this is at the point where he actually said, no, I'm not having it reversed, because he lived with the stoma. He knew what it was like. He was managing it. And they can go ahead and give him a permanent stoma, because he realized something is wrong. And the bowel cancer was not off the cards yet. So this is my conversation, like I said, with Jeremy Elster, where we will find out what happened after his permanent stoma surgery.
So yeah, I went back to the surgeon and he was like, let's do some more tests. And I was like, great, we'll see what's going on. So he called me, he's like, I've got some bad news for you. You've tested positive for adenocarcinoma. So, you know, colon cancer. And there's more bad news. There's not only one tumor, there are now four tumors. Wow. So in that year, I had a fair bit of spread. And it was staged at stage three. So I went from not having a firm diagnosis at all to now stage three. So I have a prolapsed stoma. I have stage three. I have these masses now. And now I'm basically, you know, I'm committed to going down this road that I never thought I would go down. Yeah. So he wanted to do some chemotherapy and radiation and then come back and see him once finish that and kind of do another scan and then see where we are. But the surgery he was kind of talking to me about was a surgery that was so much larger than the original one we had talked about the year prior, that I was just kind of praying that somehow the chemo and the radiation would shrink these tumors down to the point where I'd have a much smaller surgical option. So I did 8 rounds of that. And for anybody out there that's done chemotherapy or who knows someone who has. I mean, it's really harsh. I felt horribly sick, vomiting, diarrhea, nausea, no energy. I had horrible skin rashes. I mean, I had all the things. 4 months total with 8 rounds of chemo. And then I took a short break, and then it was on to the radiation therapy now. And so that was going to be 30 radiation treatments, so 5 days a week for 6 weeks straight. And again, like anybody who's done that knows that that's not very pleasant either. It was just really just so brutal. I knew I was doing incredible damage to my overall health. The surgeon did tell me that there is now an option that's available for me, because I apparently before it was like inoperable, right? So there was no procedure that he could do that was going to work or have a good chance of success. After all of that chemo and the radiation, like I was really hoping for some good news, but it was definitely not what I was hoping for. Much to the contrary, in fact, it was a surgery that I never thought even existed out there. So it's called a total pelvic exoneration, which basically removes the entire pelvic organ complex. So it was going to be my colon, it was going to be my rectum, it was going to be my anus, it was going to be the prostate and the bladder. All of those things are going to be gone. And I was horrified. Like I'd gone through, we're over 2 years in now, and this surgery, it ended up being a 15-hour surgery. Which is crazy, with three different surgeons. I had a colorectal surgeon, and then I had a urological surgeon who was going to do the bladder and the prostate. And then I also had a plastic surgeon that was going to sew my rear end shut, so that there was no opening there. And in order to do that, they had to take tissue from my hamstring muscle. He removed one third of my left hamstring and used it to sew up my rear end. So it was this crazy, crazy surgery. And the whole time I'm thinking to myself, you idiot, like why didn't you just go for the original surgery? That would have been much less complicated, much less suffering. And so I was second guessing myself.
Hindsight is a beautiful thing, but
Sure.
you cannot beat yourself up about it because you have to live with what is happening now.
Right.
The way I understand it now is that because the chemo was fairly unsuccessful, they wanted to do this surgery. I've had one or two guests on which had exactly that as well. And beforehand, I never even knew people could live without all these organs.
Yeah, I mean, just going through all of the situations that I had prior to that, it was the worst case scenario. And I didn't mention also, I was going to lose my sexual function as well. Yeah. So I was 50 at the time, and my wife, I think she's 6 years younger than me. So, that was a situation where I was like, this is kind of like the cherry on top of the sundae now. Like, oh, all these organs removed and no more sexual function for you. And it went from the worst case scenario, and this is not the best case scenario that they're offering me, because any other scenario in their mind was end of life, death. I don't buy into the fear. I never really bought into fear, but at that point I was like, well, there's really no other option for me. Like if I don't do the surgery, either A, I'm going to pass away, or B, I'm going to continue to try to find a solution which isn't really out there. So yeah, I went ahead and did the surgery. 15 hours. I mean, it's insane.
I'm sure there's also that time factor. I mean, you didn't have time to think about other options that weren't even on the card.
Correct.
So,
Yeah.
you're
So
sort of fighting for your
yeah.
life, and you do have to trust the doctors at some point.
I mean, I knew these surgeons are excellent surgeons. I had done a fair bit of research. So I actually did have a couple of months to think about it. They wanted me to kind of get my strength back up after the chemo and the radiation because I had lost some weight. They wanted me to be as strong as possible going into the surgery, which makes a lot of sense. So I think it was actually about a 2 month window there where I had that time to think about it, even though it was on the books, it was scheduled. But I had about 2 months to get myself prepared. And
So just talk us through that because I think that's so important because it's got to do with your mental resilience. It's got to do, you were talking about your wife, you have a partner, a wife, you have family, and you know this is ha going to happen. This has to happen, otherwise you might not live to see another Christmas.
Yeah, absolutely. It was challenging, and I felt like the 2 months were more like 2 years. It went by so slowly. So yeah, a lot of sleepless nights. But at the same time, I needed to get myself strong because if I, there's no guarantee that you're going to wake up from a 15-hour procedure. I mean, that's not 100%, and they don't offer that procedure to just anyway on the street. So you have to get yourself. You have to get your body right. You have to get your mind right. There was even a part of me that's like, I've got to get my other affairs in order, just in case.
UK Health Radio, the station that makes you feel good.
Imagine. Every day, clients walk into your office with their concerns about intimacy, identity, desire, and trauma. Questions that require more than basic training. Emotional and sexual dynamics are evolving, and today's professionals must evolve with them. We hear from parents unable to start conversations with their children around identity. Too often, adolescents have learned their sexual ideas from the internet. Couples have difficulty communicating about sex with each other. At the International Institute of Clinical Sexology, you can gain the specialized skills and knowledge to address those issues with confidence. Whether you are a therapist, coach, educator, or other healthcare professional, our advanced certifications and PhD program empower you to become a highly skilled, sought-after sex therapist. Expand your expertise. Elevate your earning potential. Start your journey today with the International Institute of Clinical Sexology. Imagine making a difference in our world. Learn more at clinicalsexologyphd.org.
Apples and pears, beef and Skittles, cider with Rosie, common or garden, Ant and Deck, fish and chips, mum and dad.
UK Health Radio and Health Triangle magazine. Each is good by itself, but enjoying both is always better. Add Health Triangle magazine to your monthly health regime. Check it out at ukhealthradio.com. Strawberries and cream.
UK Health Radio, the station that makes you feel good.
So, walking into the hospital that morning was probably like definitely like the loneliest feeling in the world because it was during COVID, right? So, nobody could come in there with you. So, I'm sitting there in the sitting area just waiting by myself, staring down this 15-hour procedure that's now going to leave me with two ostomies, and as we talked before, like I basically fought my entire life to avoid even having one, and now I'm faced with two. And so isn't that, life's cruelty kind of circling back, right? Life has a mysterious way of handing out lessons to you when you maybe you don't want them, but maybe you actually need them, and that was it. The next thing I knew, I woke up. It was shocking when I finally realized what had happened. It was shocking to wake up and see that as your new reality, two ostomies. It definitely wasn't out of the woods. I wasn't in the clear for several months post-op.
So
And
they couldn't say to you, okay, cancer is gone.
that's a great question. And that leads me to the next phase of this whole story. And so, yeah, after the procedure, they did tell me the report came back saying that they got clear margins on the tumors and I was cancer free. The pathologist said, you're clear. So I was relieved. I was like, great. I went through that 15-hour procedure and all everything prior. And okay, he basically said, hey, you're clear now. Like, just go live your life.
Yeah, that's all you
But
want to actually hear after something like that.
So I was relieved, but he did say, let's do another scan in 3 months just to make sure. So my wounds had barely healed. I'd just kind of gotten my weight back up again, and left. I was sorting out the two ostomies. So yeah, it was time for another scan. It was 3 months later, post-op. Lo and behold, there were 15 new lesions that had showed up on the scan, 15 mets. So mostly on my liver,
I was about to ask
but
where, because there was nothing much left. Where?
correct. Right. That's what I was thinking. And I think that's what they were thinking. But the problem was that's not really what was happening. So I have these 15 mets, mostly on my liver. A few were on my abdomen. And so at that point, I was then referred to a liver specialist. And so we talked about, is there an option for me to deal with these liver mets? And he kind of said, not really. You could maybe do some more chemo, but that's not going to really solve your problem. My body was still relatively weak from the huge surgery.
Did you have any symptoms that indicated
No.
you had any of those problems?
No. No symptoms whatsoever. I had some blood work done. My liver was still functioning pretty well. The liver enzymes were close to normal. But they did tell me that, the fact that I had these mets so quickly was an indication that, it was coming back aggressively. And so, yeah, they basically said, well, we could do a little chemo, but it's probably not going to really help much. And you've just had this huge surgery. So, we recommend getting your affairs in order. And so, that was after all I had gone through up until that point, to be told there is no more solution for you. There are no other options for you. That was probably one of the lowest moments in my life. But in some ways, it was actually freeing because I could actually be, I was sort of let go to kind of find another option for this particular problem where I couldn't find, before I couldn't find any options for my previous problem. But this problem seemed like maybe I had a chance of, finding another solution. So,
Now you're left with this diagnosis and you're basically told, okay, we can't really do much for you anymore.
no. They told me to get my affairs in order. And that was kind of the final. Like, that
So
was it.
what was going through your mind? I mean, you said it already, you actually found it freeing.
I found it freeing because I never truly believed in the whole cancer standard of care. I mean, the chemo and the radiation, and the surgery, the 35 years that I was living with UC was all kind of, that was like one section of my life, and I never thought that I would ever get to this next section. And so everything I did in those 35 years was to avoid having this type of scenario. In my mind, maybe like not truly believing what I was doing was an indication of why maybe it didn't work as well as my medical team, would have wanted or I would have wanted. So I would say to anybody out there, believe in what you're doing. And whether you like it or not, I think just believe in what you're doing. And perhaps if I had had more of a belief, I wanted to believe it was working, I really did. But there was a part of me that in those 35 years thinking, like, no, I don't really believe in that. Like, I don't really think that's the right thing for me. And maybe that had an effect on the eventual outcome. So it was, in some ways, it was quite freeing because now, in my mind, I was sort of freed up from the, I don't want to, maybe shackles is not the right word, but just being stuck in that system that kind of just grinds you up and spits you out. So yeah, I was kind of like, in a way, like, okay, now I really can control my own destiny here and do go on my terms, even though like all the things that I had done prior to that weren't really things that I ever imagined myself doing. So that technically it wasn't really, you know, never really on my terms, but I did make some decisions that were crucial to how it all turned out in the end. And so yeah, I took full responsibility for how it all went down, and the decision, I thought I was making good decisions based on the information that I had. And sometimes in life you can make a good decision and it still doesn't work out. So I accepted all that, took full responsibility for all that. And have I had some doubts, you know, over the years? Maybe, but I'm mostly just okay with my decisions that I made, and you just have to move on.
So what happened then? This is a couple of years ago and you're still here.
Yeah. This was now towards the end of 2021.
Yeah.
And, you know, my parents were shocked. My wife was shocked. Like, my sister was, you know, everyone was shocked in my family. So we started looking at some alternative clinics in Mexico, and we decided on this one called Oasis of Hope. They had been around the longest, and they were a family-run business. Mm-hmm. So I kind of felt like this had the right feel for me, and having the hope in their name just seemed like I needed some hope, right? Who doesn't need hope? But I really felt like I needed a lot of hope at that point. Hmm. So yeah, we talked to them and we said, okay, like they looked at my records and they said, I think you should come down. I think we can help you. Mm-hmm. So my sister and her partner and I all went down a week later.
You've got no time to spare, so.
No time. Yeah, like the clock was ticking. Like, mm-hmm. You know, my surgical team, they didn't give me a timeline on how much time I thought I had, nor did I really want to hear it anyway, because I don't really believe in those timelines. I think people can get too caught up in the timeline and that can actually affect the outcome. I was blocking that out of my mind. I don't want a timeline. I don't want to hear how much time you think I have. But they did tell me it was going to be a painful end to my life. Like, they told me that. So I was like, yeah, I get it.
That takes so, incredible strength. Yeah. In my mind, that takes incredible strength not to want to know the timeline.
Yeah.
It's something, yeah, because they could potentially tell you. But I think it's so good that you didn't, because like you said, it can have a negative effect on you. Yeah.
I felt originally when I went to see the surgeon, he just looked at my chart and said, oh, you have 35 years of UC. You have a mass in your rectum. Therefore, you must have colorectal cancer and we're going to remove it. And that'll be that. But in my mind, that's 35 years of perseverance. That's 35 years of living with a difficult situation. Like that really tests you in that amount of time. And so yeah, I really think that kind of hardened me to some degree. If I had bought into the fear, I probably wouldn't be here, number one, or two, like it would have gone totally differently. So yeah, anybody out there who's facing a difficult challenge, I would just say, you know, sort of broadly speaking, like, don't get overcome with fear, you know, like that's going to really spiral you downward. And so I know my family was very fearful, and I could see it in their face, I could hear it in their voices. But for me, I was like, no, I'm not buying into the fear of my situation now. And that's why the Oasis of Hope sounded so appealing. I mean, if you think of nothing else besides the name, like, mm-hmm. okay, like I was saying before, I definitely am in need of some hope here. And yeah, the minute I walked in, it felt like the right place. It was a hospital, but it felt like the right place for me. Like, it had a much more welcoming feel to it. I felt like the doctors really wanted to see you not only recover, but do well and feel healthy again. That just seemed like the right approach. It was a holistic approach, you know, treating the mind, body, and spirit. I think a lot of people, you know, with the fear and stress and just a lot of negative thoughts going through people's heads, I think you need to really treat everything. If you just treat the localized problem, I don't think you're really coming up with a good, you know, sort of holistic solution for people. And so So that was kind of their mindset down there, was just let's treat everything. And
Because it's all
and so
connected.
yeah.
It is all connected.
Absolutely. 100%. So yeah, like, okay, I've got some liver mets, I've got a few other mets in my abdomen. I just went through a crazy situation that was 3 years long with a lot of scar tissue, both emotional scar tissue and actual scar tissue. So yeah, I needed some hope. I needed someone to treat my entire body. I needed someone to basically nurse me back to full health. That's exactly what they offered down there.
Okay.
And then there are others too. I don't want to say there aren't other facilities. There are others. And like I said, I chose this one because they had been around the longest and they're a family run business. And I just felt like they were more personalized there. So yeah, I just felt like it was the right place for me to be. And like I said, the minute I walked in, I kind of just knew it was the right place.
UK Health Radio, the station that makes you feel good.
Sarah wasn't bad at her job, she was stuck in hidden grief. After her dog died, she took a sales role just to stay busy, but every pitch felt empty. A Cogna Movement session uncovered that she was seeking the warmth of her dog rather than serving her clients. Using our patented movement and sensory patterns, she cleared the grief and rocketed to the top. What hidden emotion is holding you back? Try our Essentials program at the special UK Health Radio rate. Visit cognamovement.com/radio or click on the Cogna Movement banner on the UK Health Radio homepage. Results vary.
What if your healing journey could feel empowering, hopeful, even transformative? Welcome to the Alkaline Collective Mastermind, a community for anyone facing cancer, staying cancer-free, or committed to prevention. No matter your stage, whether you've chosen conventional care, an integrative path, or a fully holistic approach, here, you're not alone. Here, your healing journey becomes a journey of empowerment. We explore the science of oxygenation, metabolism, and alkalinity, while strengthening your emotional, spiritual, and physical well-being. This is a mastermind with heart, accountability, connection, wisdom, and real support. Because your journey isn't just about surviving. It's about thriving. Join us by clicking on the Alkaline Collective Mastermind banner on the UK Health Radio homepage or directly at alkaline-collective.com, where self-belief grows, healing deepens, and transformation begins.
UK Health Radio, the station that makes you feel good.
So what did the, if I could call it, treatment look like? Because you said they used all, they incorporated everything, mind, body, spirit.
Yeah, so the sort of the centerpiece of the treatment is called a dendritic cell therapy. And so it's kind of like an immunotherapy. It's basically like your body's way to identify the cancer and then just attack the cancer cells only, and not like chemotherapy just attacks every cell in your body, healthy, cancer, whatever.
Yeah.
So the dendritic cell therapy is a way for your body to recognize the cancer and attack that only with your body's own immune system, obviously. So that's the centerpiece. And that comes at the very end of the, I was there for 3 weeks. I think they've shortened it down to 2 weeks now, but at the very end of the stay is when they do the dendritic cell. It's basically an injection. But prior to that, they kind of prepare your body for the dendritic cell. And it's a lot of IVs. It's vitamin C, B17. There's blood ozone. There's hyperthermia, where they sort of heat up your body temperature between 104 and 108 degrees Fahrenheit, which is inhospitable for cancer cells to survive. So the first 2 weeks, it's all about essentially setting yourself up for the dendritic cell therapy. So it's kind of like setting the table for the main course kind of thing. But yeah, during that time, there's also a pastor that comes every day, and he's very uplifting. He gives everybody a lot of emotional support. They have a psychotherapist as well, so you can talk to them about any sort of other sort of emotional things going on as well. So yeah, it's treating everything. It's treating the body holistically, which I think if you really want to heal yourself, you have to treat it holistically. Like, that's really my belief, and it makes the most sense to me. But yeah, it's your mind too. Like, people, particularly with cancer, I mean, other ailments as well, but particularly with cancer, which is so debilitating and so, I mean, dark in a lot of ways, right? Because I don't think if I was strong enough mentally, I would have even gotten anywhere near where I got to. So,
And also the support, you said your family
yeah.
accompanied you, they went with you to this.
My sister and her partner went with me. So you're allowed a couple of visitors, and they can stay with you right in the hospital. There's an extra bed in your room. But yeah, amazing family support. This was like 3 years in now. So, I mean, I had to quit my job. So that was a challenge. Having good support is crucial. Like, that's probably one of the most important things.
Now, this entire experience, I'm sure, has changed your outlook and approach to life and purpose and to everyday
Yeah,
things.
absolutely. I mean, so yeah, after 3 months, when I left the hospital, came back home, there's a home protocol, and then they wanted me to do another scan in 3 months. So I did the scan 3 months. 12 of the mets were completely gone, and the other three were almost completely gone. They had significantly re reduced metabolic activity, which basically means they were almost gone, but not quite totally gone. So in 3 months' time, I basically went from end-of-life situation to cancer-free, and they've had some pretty significant responses, but mine, they were saying, was a miracle. They had never seen one quite that significant and in a timely manner like that before, or at least not in quite some time. So, they were calling me the miracle man or whatever. And I was like,
Well, rightly so,
yeah,
because 3 months is actually not a long time, if you think of it, in terms of what you've been through.
so yeah, like that's about as quickly as you could possibly get the information that you need to assess your situation. And so, yeah, in 3 months' time, after 3 years prior of going through all that stuff, I mean, it was a miraculous response. And yeah, I do. I owe them my life. They're like family to me now. And I do go back down once a year now for just the dendritic cell therapy only, just as kind of a prophylactic. And every time I go, I see doctors, and they're like family to me, and they saved my life. And they do send me, like, as sort of a reciprocation, they do send me prospective patients, mostly in the colorectal cancer arena. And I talk to them, I tell them about my story and the response I had down there. It really gives people a lot of hope. When they hear my story, because yeah, they saved my life, and so I'm happy to do whatever it is they want me to do in terms of talking to people and spreading the word and just giving people hope that there are options out there. Like, most people go through something similar, maybe not quite as drastic, before coming up with or deciding they don't want to do the standard of care anymore. Like, maybe they've gotten to a point where they've run a crossroads. Like, they either do more chemo, more surgeries, or I've got to find another path forward. And so most people, yeah, have kind of gotten into the system for a little while, and then they decide they don't want to do that anymore. Very few people start off saying, no, I don't want to do the standard of care at all. I'm going to find another way. And so yeah, like, I would like to maybe change that mindset a little bit if I could, and just say, look, people, like, there are other options out there that might be better for you. Not to say that maybe the standard of care might not be, like, maybe there is a scenario where that's good for you. And I'm not here to say, like, that's you should definitely not do that ever, because there might be a scenario where it does work for people. But just, yeah, like, in my situation, just the location of the original tumor is what kind of set me down this entire journey. And if it had been in a different location, I might have just been able to just chop it out and move on, and that would have been the end of my cancer story.
Yeah.
But unfortunately, it was in a spot, in a location where it required pretty significant, surgical options, and with the ostomy, and yeah, I have the two ostomies now. I had that crazy journey, and it's all part of my story now, and it's made me who I am today. It sounds kind of corny, but it's true. And so now you were asking me before, like, how has it changed my perspective? It makes you appreciate life in so many different ways. I mean, just waking up in the morning and feeling good. Like, I don't have any pain now. I have no pain, and my ostomies are functioning well. And yeah, I go out every day and try to make the most of every day. I still spend a large majority of my day, taking care of myself. I go to the gym. I've been going to the gym to work on my strength
Yeah.
training. I've never really done any gym work before, so it's been a great kind of just to stay disciplined and keep me, getting up every morning and feeling excited about my day. I get up early and I go.
I think this is something that I myself had to learn as well, that even though I'm cancer-free now, which I want to stay now, there are so many things that you can still do
Sure.
to aid your body in terms of exercise.
Absolutely.
I was never one to do a lot of exercises, but especially now I'm also in 50s. I think it's so important to set the path for the way you want to age later on as well, to do exercises and to get the cardiovascular exercises
Yeah.
in, because it's so important to actually also fight off
I had to
cancer.
start off really slowly because, my entire pelvic organ complex was removed. So there was so much removed that I really needed to go slowly with my recovery routine. And so to start, I was just walk around the block. Then it was okay, walk around the block twice. And it kind of just progressed from there. And eventually I started working on my abdominal stuff. And that was a real, I just had to go at that really slowly and really controlled. But yeah, you had to just, I just slowly progressed, slowly ramped it up. And yeah, it got to the point where I was eventually able to start doing all of my activities again that I hadn't done for 3 years. Like I hadn't surfed, snowboarded, windsurfed for 3 whole years. I scoured the internet for anybody that had two ostomies. And there's a group on Facebook called Double Baggers. So people with two ostomies. And there's about 10,000 people on there. And I was on there every day asking questions, reading other people's comments, just trying to sort out, like, hey, what are people doing? And I came across people that are running marathons, doing long distance cycling, found one person that was skiing, snow skiing. But I didn't find anybody that was snowboarding, surfing, or windsurfing with two ostomies. And I'm like, well, here I go. This is my opportunity to show whoever, maybe just the internet or whoever is out there, that these things are all possible. And so, yeah, after I was cancer free there, I had a friend ring me up and say, hey, like, do you want to take this surf trip? And I hadn't surfed in, it's been 3 years since I'd been on a board. And I was like, look, let me just try to paddle out once just to see how it feels and see if I can even get to my feet. So I went out, tried it. I was like, I think it's doable. Yeah. So I was like, let's go. So we went in the Central Valley of California. It's called a surf ranch. So it's like actually a man-made wave pool where everything's structured. So the wave breaks in the same place. And all you have to do is just take a couple of paddles in, get to your feet, and then we're off. It was almost like going to the gym and training in a controlled environment, only in a wave pool setting. And so, yeah, I had the time of my life. I couldn't believe that I was back on a board again. And oddly enough, this is what makes that day even more special, is there were other people there. There were only about maybe 20 people total. There were three other people that had incredible stories. One had been attacked by a shark and survived that. He got airlifted. He was out surfing like in these islands off the coast, and he got attacked and had to get airlifted back to the mainland and get emergency surgery. And so he was one. Another gentleman had been caught in a bad avalanche, snow avalanche back in the 80s. And that was like the biggest avalanche, you know, ever recorded in that region. So he was there. And then there was another guy who lost all the feeling in his legs. He was a paraplegic. Mm-hmm. And so they would put him on a board face down and just push him into waves. And he would just ride on his stomach all the way to the very end. Wow. So there were all these people on this trip that I'm not sure, there must have been some divine intervention, like how we were all brought together on this day, just a random day in April. And then here we are, we're sharing these stories and just like this amazing energy in the pool. And so the surf ranch started doing this new thing where they would give out this award for people, like a kind of like the wave of the day. I have the shirt that says wave of the day on it. And so they gave me the shirt and they gave me this trophy and said, you know, you deserve the wave of the day. Like, cause people, you know, it started circulating around, like not just my friends, but circulating around about my story. And so compared to the shark attack victim, the guy that got stuck in a horrible avalanche where many people died. And then the guy that was unable to walk. Like they gave me the wave of the day. And I was just like, I just remember like just being moved to tears. Like I couldn't believe after all I've been through. And these other people had incredible, incredible stories. Like they decided that my story was maybe the more amazing one out of all of them. So yeah, that was probably one of the best days in my life, like hands down. So that was amazing.
It's a lovely conclusion to that chapter, if you could call it that. You know?
Yeah. And I'm challenging myself every day. And it's just so interesting. Like I don't try to put myself in really crazy situations anymore. Like I try to manage it as best as I can, but you know, the ocean's unpredictable, the snow is unpredictable, like things go wrong. But it's just interesting, like I don't have any fear. Like I've already been through so much. I've had, you know, multiple near death experiences that I really don't live life with fear, like not even at all. And living with two ostomies, it's really, every day is a challenge, if I'm being perfectly honest. And you know, like you have an ostomy, like you know, things go wrong. And my body was changing a lot, just putting the weight back on, the muscle back on. And I was going through different types of appliances to try to find the right one that would fit in my changing body. That, you know, like that was something that I think people don't appreciate too. It was like, oh, there's so many different products out there and so many different manufacturers, and trying to find the right products for you, you know, and once you do it, it just makes everything so much easier. It really does.
So much easier. And also at this stage, a shout out to all the manufacturers, because without them, we could not do what we do. I've had guests on that went with years of not having the ideal bag. They actually were getting wrong bags and they were suffering, even though they shouldn't be suffering anymore. So it's really crucial to understand and to know that there is a bag out there. You are able to find it. You must find it.
Absolutely. And, you know, most of the manufacturers are happy to send you samples and you can try out various products. And I would just encourage people that are maybe new to the game, like try them all and do different activities with them on and see which one works best for you. And once you find the right ones, it makes all the difference in the world. It really does. And then it just gives you that confidence. I mean, it takes you a while to feel confident with ostomies. It really does. And just knowing that you can go out there and be very confident that you're not going to have a situation that is going to be, uncomfortable. Let's just call it that.
I really like what you said. You're open to speaking to people and sharing your story and helping them understand what they might be going through because of what you've gone through, and you are living proof of how you've gone through all of it and what you are doing now, what is actually possible, because it would have been so easy for you to just say, okay, this is it, I'm throwing the towel, this is it. But you persevered, you fought for your right to be here.
No, it's true. I mean, it definitely wasn't easy. And
No.
What's the old adage? Nothing good in life comes easy. So yeah, it couldn't have been any harder. It really couldn't
No.
have. And so yeah, I do feel like there are some other people out there that are maybe just presented with a situation that they never thought they'd be presented with, and they're looking for people out there that may have gone through something similar. And I feel like I've gone through pretty much all of it out there, to be honest, like considering, where I started and then where I came. I didn't find anybody out there with two ostomies that likes to do the things that I like to do. So I had to find inspiration not only in the ostomy world, but outside of the ostomy world as well. And I learned so much about myself, not just about, what I was going through, just the technical side of things, but just on the personal level, I learned so much about myself. I realized I'm much stronger than I ever thought I was. So yeah, it's what life is what you do when things get tough, I guess. Things get tough for pretty much everyone, right? At some point in their lives, sometimes for greater lengths of time, like mine was 3 years. The heavy part of it was 3 years. And, some people would say, well, living with two ostomies is probably like pretty challenging. And yes, it is, but I'm living my best life now. And I mean, yeah, like I had tremendous loss and it's never coming back. And I'm sure you can identify with that. And all of the ostomates out there can identify with that. But yeah, it's a part of me is gone, or many parts of me are gone. But yeah, rather than just feeling sorry for myself and my situation, and like, this is the life I've been given and this is what I'm going to do with it. And so yeah, hopefully, other people out there are, there are so many people out there doing the same thing. Like I said earlier, like I needed some inspiration. I needed some guidance to make sure that this is doable, right? Like, can I actually live a good life with two ostomies? And the answer is absolutely, absolutely yes. So,
Wonderful. I mean, that's a nice way to close this very, very inspiring story, because I'm just amazed at what you've gone through, your outlook on life, your perseverance, because it takes true strength to go through all this. This is not easy. This is not easy. And to actually, from a diagnosis and then another diagnosis on top of that, to actually find the strength and courage to move forward, to look for alternatives. And I think that's, to me, is so important. There's not always one solution. There are multiple solutions and options out there, and not every option is the right one, or not every solution is the right one for that person. But find different avenues. I think that's the most important lesson for me that I've learned through your story. Look at alternative ways. They might just be the right one for you. For those that want to follow you on social media, are they able to? Is there a way of them to connect with you?
But yeah, they can follow me on Instagram. My handle is airjer10, so AIRJER10. And then on Facebook, it's just Jeremy Elster, ELSTER. So, every now and again, I'll post some things, but more importantly, you can contact me through those channels if you want to have a chat or just want to, whatever, ask me some questions. I'm more than happy to help.
Thank you so much, Jeremy, for sharing your story, for sharing it so openly. To me, it's like you've surfed the ocean, you studied the weather, and your journey has shown how to face life's storms as well, because that's what you really did. It was not just a storm, I would say it was a tsunami that you've mastered. And I thank you so much for sharing your story, and I'm sure it inspires everyone listening also to stay grounded and to ride their own waves and to live fully.
Absolutely. Yeah, that's great. You use those metaphors. Yeah, but no, it's true. And thank you so much, Rafael. It's been a real pleasure, and I enjoyed speaking with you. It's always a pleasure to talk to people that have shared experiences, and you went through the cancer and you have an ostomy. And so yeah, we have a lot in common, and I know what it takes for you to get to where you are. And so it's been a real pleasure, and thank you so much.
Take care. All the best. Bye for
Thank
now.
you. You too. Bye. Thank you.